coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, everybody. I'm your host. It's your boy, Ricky Carmona. Welcome to Who Shot Ya? With me in the studio, I have film critic and host of Switchblade Sisters. It's Sometimes It Snows in April, April Wolf.
Hi, Ricky.
Hi, April. What's good with you, April?
Something good happened to me last night because the nude has been bad, like air horns. So bad. And I had the chance to meet with a candidate for Congress in Michigan who's running in the 8th District. Against a really terrible dude named Mike Bishop. He's just the worst. So terrible. And she's running against him. Her name is Alyssa Slotkin. And she is just like so smart and so real. And that is, you know, like the blue wave may or may not exist. We don't really know. But there are people in that kind of grassroots area who are trying so hard and who are raising a bunch of money and who are reaching out to people. And she just had the best ideas. And it renewed my faith in the world. because there are competent people who have strategies. They have like actual strategies and messaging. And I'm just like, thank God. So I feel good again.
That's what's up. Beautiful. That's what's up. April starting off with the political talk.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, and that chuckling voice that you hear right there is the film reviews editor at The Wrap, El Mero Mero de Navidad, the one and only Alonso Duralde. Alonso, what's good with you, bro? Hit it.
It's summer. I've always wanted to do that on this show.
That wasn't a sound effect. He really did that.
He did.
No, his finger's broken.
Building off of what April said, actually, I want to. There are things that are distracting me from the current horror show of the world, but that are also giving me hope. And they take many forms. There's the Mr. Rogers documentary, which reminds me that you can actually be like a good, kind person and share like positive things with the world on television. There's The Handmaid's Tale, which, as horrifying as it is, like there's an active and, you know, visible revolution going on in that show, which kind of like makes me feel like no matter how terrible things get, there will be still people who fight back. And then also there's the costumes in Superfly, which I'm just are the greatest thing right now. I drop everything, people. Go see Superfly. Really, just for the costumes, if nothing else, but it's really fun.
Do you know who did the costume?
I have no idea. But
we got to look it up.
Oscar shortlist. I'm telling you. There's an entire gang of cocaine dealers who dress head to toe in white, and they drive white cars, and they carry white guns.
Yeah.
And what are they called?
Yeah.
The Snow Patrol.
Come on now.
I love it.
That's amazing. I haven't watched this week's Handmaid's Tale. Like, whenever I'm going to watch The Handmaid's Tale, I'm like, oh, I got to watch Handmaid's Tale. And also, ugh, I got to watch The Handmaid's Tale. It's fucking emotionally exhausting.
This week's will rev you up.
Okay. That's what's up. And ladies and gentlemen, we got special guests in the building. You may know them from their podcast, Las Culturistas. So our first guest, he heard your demo tape. That shit was faker than a scam. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the one and only Bone Yang.
I love a slant rhyme.
And his co-host on Las Culturistas, he feels so good to be a Crooklyn Dodger. What's happening to Rerun and Roger? Ladies and gentlemen, it's Matt Rogers.
Thank you for that.
Yes, beautiful. Yes.
Wow,
thank you. Thank you. Shout out to the alcoholics. Shout out to the Crooklyn Dodgers.
Of course. God bless both of them.
Wait, Matt, what's good with you?
Okay, I know what's good. Okay, have you guys seen the Star Is Born trailer?
Yes.
Not as often as y'all have.
No, yes. I guarantee that that's true because he can attest. Like, it's actually embarrassing how many times I've watched it.
You've Zapruder'd it at this point.
I have Zapruder'd it. I watched
it three times a day, and I have literally Zapruder'd it. I was pausing. You know how there's like the super cut during like the last little montage part of the trailer. Yeah. You know, it's a beautiful dramatic film we're gonna get. So we have beautiful shots of just Lady Gaga in a business suit bending over screaming in a bathroom. I'm like, what's that? This beautiful image of her like crying and being dragged away from someone into an elevator. What's that? Yeah. I've looked through the whole thing. And I the second the other video I've been watching a lot of, and this is embarrassing. And if you I've already like embarrass myself with watching a Star Is Born trailer a lot, but do you know the new Maroon 5 video?
I do not.
It's called Girls Like You. It made me cry.
Wow. Oh, wow.
It made me cry and emotionally touched me in a real way. A Maroon 5 song moved me.
Wow.
So I don't know what's going on with me. I'm from New York. I'm in Los Angeles. Maybe it's like my just body chemistry has changed.
Jet lag.
Yeah, the jet lag, the 3-hour jet lag has changed me as a person.
Altitude.
It's crazy. I don't know. It's like this, like this shot of like Adam Levine and his wife and baby at the end, and I'm like crying like I care.
Because
I really,
you do.
I should hear.
Fundamentally, you do.
Maybe. We were watching Pose. You know the new show Pose.
They're taking all my shit. Oh my god. Oh my
god. I just wanted to say, like, the other day we were asked what would our house be called if we had a house. We were the mother of our own house. Mm-hmm. I said I'd be the House of Basique. So that contextualizes me for you guys and the listeners.
There you go.
To Maroon 5.
Did I steal all your good shit?
No, you didn't. Well, I'm trying to like dredge through my brain for what's happened in the last week that's been good, and like, gotta tell you, maybe not that much has been good for me.
We had a good show.
We had a good show last night. Okay, what's good for me? I will say what's coming to mind, top of mind. I had an amazing yogurt parfait this morning for breakfast.
Oh, baby.
Okay.
And it's at this coffee shop in Santa Monica, and I was like dreading having to go all the way to the west side, but stopped into this coffee shop, Cafe Bolivar.
Oh, Café Bolivar.
Sounds good. And it was just the most delicious, sumptuous parfait I've ever had. Papaya, strawberry, blueberries, pineapple, the works.
They put papaya in
the
mix?
They put papaya and it works.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to California produce.
Yeah.
I love it. So that's what's good for
that's
me.
That's pretty good.
That's great.
Hashtag blessed.
Hashtag blessed.
You guys are changing.
We are.
We're different now.
I don't want to go home. I really don't. I enjoy it here. I like who I am.
Hey, Ricky.
Oh.
I was hoping to know what's good with you.
Oh, well, thank you, April. Thank you so much, April.
Well, I mean, this is going to start off sad. We know last week it was the passing of Anthony Bourdain,
yes,
which was horrible. But a friend of mine, a comic, put together a fundraiser last night for him to help the National Suicide Prevention Line. And it was just a big dance party. It was called Homecoming. Or, I'm sorry, it was called Homegoing.
Mm.
And we had it at the Silver Lake Lounge. And I DJ as well. So I DJed this mug.
Nice.
And it was dope. People came out. We asked for people to bring in food donations and donate money. We raised a couple $100. People brought in food. Mm. We had food that we were going to, I assume, will get donated to a location. But then people just like brought food that we could eat there. So people were drinking, eating, dancing.
Living.
Living that life, son.
Yeah.
Living that life.
Are you a DJ that takes requests or a DJ that does not take requests?
Yo, my DJ name is I Don't Take Requests, yo. Don't come to me
DJ
with that.
No requests.
DJ no requests, yo. I love that, actually.
I respect it.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be a good episode, y'all. On today's episode, we are going to be talking about Ocean's 8. We'll hear an interview with Joria Clark and the director of the new hard-to-describe film The Cleanse by Bobby Miller. And as always, we will have our staff picks. But first, it is time for our news roundup game called It Addicts, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. I will read a news blurb, a headline. April, Alonzo, Bourne, or Matt will jump in with their take by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care, though? This has been my favorite story that I've read in a minute, yo. My man, Eddie Murphy, will be playing Dolomite in the Netflix film. If you don't know who Dolomite is, then you need to educate yourselves. This week it was announced that Eddie Murphy will portray actor Rudy Ray Moore in a new Netflix biopic. Moore is famous for creating and playing the character of the vengeful pimp Dolomite in the blaxploitation classic of the same name. To get a sense of the character, here's a little clip of Dolomite himself.
Dolomite is my name, and fucking up motherfuckers is my game.
Poetry. Know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Is this important? Do y'all care?
Well, okay, the headline is misleading. I thought Eddie Murphy was actually doing a remake of Dolomite, and I was like, okay, I could be down for that.
Yeah.
I could also be down for a biopic of Rudy Ray Moore, but those are two different things.
Yes, yeah. The reason that I think is pretty exciting is the people who are writing it is...
It's Craig Brewer is directing.
Craig Brewer is directing it.
Hustle and Flow and Black Steak.
Yes,
Moan,
Hustle and
which
Flow.
Are both, both interesting, fascinating films.
Yeah.
So.
And it's written by Larry Karaszewski and
Scott Alexander.
And Scott Alexander.
Okay, well then I'm doubly in.
Yeah.
There you go. Also, I feel like, from what I read, it seems like it seems like it's sort of the biopic that tracks the sort of conception of Dolemite as a character that Rudy Ray Moore sort of put together in his act, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool. Like, I think he was working, like, on, like, some job where, like, he would hear these urban legends of Dolemite, mm-hmm. this wild pimp character, Dolemite, and, yeah. like, I don't know, I definitely care. And I want to say that Dolemite holds a special place in my heart because I was exposed to Dolemite through Mad TV back when Ari Spears, Deborah Wilson, and Phil Lamar were cast members, mm-hmm. and they would parody Dolemite stuff in sketches, and it was a formative thing to, like, see blaxploitation sort of be, like, lampooned in this fun way. I care. That's my thing.
And Eddie Murphy doesn't work with good writers and good directors enough.
That's what I was just going to say. Yeah. I have no gauge on what the quality of an Eddie Murphy movie is ever going to be after, like, Haunted Mansion. Do you remember that shit?
Which, oh, yeah. might not be the worst one.
It's not terrible.
Right. I mean,
Meet Dave. I was just going to say.
Meet Dave. Also, Norbit.
I kind of fucking love Norbit.
But you kind of love Norbit.
I went to the theater to see Norbit, and same. I do not regret it.
A Thousand Words was painful.
A Thousand Words was horrific.
Yeah. Adventures of Pluto Nash.
Right. There you go. But then there's Dreamgirls. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Like,
so,
yeah.
yes. But I don't think any of... I think that man just says yes a lot. Like, you know what I mean?
But not lately.
Right. And then maybe it's because he felt like, oh, I've been saying yes a lot. Like, he saw his own, like, resume lately and was like, I don't know.
Or is that thing where you make enough money where, like, okay, mortgage is paid off. all my various children have, like, trust funds. I can just kick back for a second.
Yeah, right. Sure. Yeah. Right. But, you know, he's Eddie Murphy. I'm always going to care.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, totally.
You got to care. You got to have some respect. Okay. So, I guess this next one is me. Guys, everyone's trying to trick me into seeing this movie, Hereditary. I do not like scary movies. Actually, you mentioned Handmaid's Tale. That's the kind of thing I have to watch from, like, across the room because I'm so nervous. You said, like, you're excited about watching it, but at the same time, you're, like, really devastated you have to watch it because yep. of what it's going to put you through.
Yep.
I go through this a lot, so naturally, I can't see horror movies, and hearing that it's, like, the scariest movie ever has me a little anxious about it, but... Anyway, besides Ocean's 8, the other big release this week was the horror film Hereditary. The film has garnered great reviews, with many critics saying it's one of the scariest movies in years. But CinemaScore gave the film a D+. For those who don't know, CinemaScore tracks movies' reception by having audiences assign them a letter grade. Now, the good news is the film did not get an F, like some other classic films such as Mother, I Know Who Killed Me, and Dr. T and the Women. Is this important? Do we care?
April, you're our horror person.
We could just, like, not say anything the whole time and just go...
Have you already seen it?
Yeah, yes. I reviewed that one. I think, did you review
I reviewed
it too?
It, yeah.
Yeah, that was...
And I'm like you, if I didn't have to see horror movies for work, I'd...
Right.
No,
it's sure. a tough one.
Yeah, whereas I'm the opposite.
Yeah,
and
you run toward.
I didn't find this film scary, but I didn't... It's
got a moody, dread kind of...
Yeah, yeah. And parts were kind of so horrifically funny as
right,
well.
Right.
Like, it's... It's going for weird and going for just, like, putting you on edge.
Yeah.
And so I didn't find it scary, and I actually don't know that it meant to be scary.
They marketed it as scary as
but
fuck.
That's A24, though, and yeah. They'll do that.
They pulled
yeah.
that with The Witch as well, which
is... The Witch is not sure. scary.
The Witch, sure. but The Witch is it's scary in a way, but again, not in the way that they're selling it. And yeah. The Witch and this movie, I think, have two things in common. They premiered at Sundance. People at Sundance went apeshit. Mm-hmm. And there's a tendency to go over apeshit about certain movies at Sundance. And then you play them at sea level and they're like, well, I don't know if it's that. Mm. But also, A24, and I love A24. They release some great stuff. And I think they're really shrewd about how they market things. But they'll open a movie like The Witch or Hereditary wide. And they'll market it as a solid, eek, you know, you will poop your pants horror mm-hmm, movie. Mm-hmm. And then that audience runs out to see it opening weekend. And they're like,
disappointed.
I wasn't. Yeah. My pants are clean.
They, should cut, they should do a Paranormal Activity style trailer where they cut to the audience and everyone's just like what?
But I think that people underestimate how funny this film can actually be.
Wow.
Okay, so speaking of film criticism, a new study was released this week by the USC Annenberg Inclusion Initiative. It assessed the reviews of the top 100 grossing films of 2017 that were posted on Rotten Tomatoes. The study looked at the gender and racial breakdown of critics reviewing the films. Of the nearly 20,000 reviews examined, 22.2% were written by women. while 77.9% were written by men. This equals a gender ratio of 3.55 males to every one female reviewer. Mm. So the study also revealed that 82% of all the reviews were written by white critics, of any gender of white critics. So, is this important? Do you care?
I mean, it's important, I'm you know, this show is all about the idea of bringing different voices to the table and stuff. And, I mean, obviously this study is based solely on Rotten Tomatoes, which is not necessarily reflective of everything, but, I mean, it's there on the right trail. I mean, yes, there's totally a problem. There are too many straight white dudes.
Yeah, especially, and, like, you think of, I mean, the movie that you just said, Superfly, where it's like, I'm going to go on Rotten Tomatoes and I'm going to see, you know, the top 12 film critics. It's going to be all white dudes telling me what
I said
they think
Ingo
of
to that.
Yeah.
she liked it. Yeah.
Did she? Oh, great.
Yeah.
Like what they think of Superfly. And there are times where I'm like, oh, man, I'm sorry, guys. I just don't give a shit what you guys think of Superfly or a movie just that falls in that circle, you know? So.
And at the same
hire more
time,
people of color. Yeah.
Then you've got critics of color who are only getting called to do
Superfly,
to do like Superfly, and that's it, and so they can't get into mainstream reviewing.
Yeah, I
want
to hear what they say about have to say about book club, you know.
Yeah, right.
exactly. That, but you know, you.
I want to know what World Star thinks about book club. No, World Star.
Let's see.
I do want the World Star review.
I absolutely want that. I think they'd love it.
Probably.
I will go out on a limb and say Book Club is the best stoner film of the last 5 years that I've seen.
If you're seeing it, you were doing it wrong.
I went so stoned and it was beautiful.
Oh,
so fun. Anyway.
They did give out free booze coupons at the press screening.
Oh, there you go. That's gorgeous.
I wasn't drinking that night, so I was stone cold sober. And I still loved it.
I don't usually drink, but I was like, I'm going to have a white wine for this. It seems like it would be interactive.
Get in the universe.
Yeah.
Well, this is great, y'all. I love this whole new format. It's like a 60 minutes. We're like 60 round minutes
table.
Team. Exactly. And we just knock them all out. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking about Ocean's 8, y'all.
Friendly Fire is a war movie podcast, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't listen to it.
Boy, I'll say. You know, a lot of people, Ben and Adam, might not initially watch a war movie podcast.
What's in it for me, they say.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what's in it for you. What's in it for you is a biting socio-political commentary, scattered dick and fart
Wait
jokes.
And a lot of history. Like, there's the depicted wars, but also the history of the time period that these films were made and released.
They're very telling.
So download Friendly Fire every Friday from your favorite podcatcher.
Or MaximumFun.org.
Hey, welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are
April Wolf,
Matt Rogers,
Bowen Yang,
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today we are talking about Ocean's 8. Bowen and Matt, since you are our guests, if you could both please give us a brief synopsis of said film.
Well, Ocean's 8, I'll start.
I will just say... You take the first half, I'll take the second half.
Great. Holistically, though, Ocean's 8 is like... It's the queer imagination just playing dress up, just like having fun with jewelry and dresses and gowns. But anyway, it is sort of it's a movie that takes place in the world of the Oceans franchise. Follows Debbie Ocean as she gets out of jail and tries to pull off a spectacular heist to rob a diamond necklace, Cartier necklace from an actress at the Met Ball.
Yeah. And hijinks ensue.
There you go.
She gets her girls together. Yeah. Her main girl is played by Cate Blanchett, who rides in on a motorcycle in a blunt bang, looking fierce. And she's just down, okay?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how they were corresponding the whole time, but Cate has been ready for Sandra to get out of prison so they can get this Met Gala gig. And then they hook up with some other people that they need the help of, including... what is Sarah Paulson's function in this movie?
She's the fence.
She's the... Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so they have her. Rihanna smoked a lot of blunts, and she is a hacker.
Yep.
Mindy Kaling, she knows about Jules.
She knows about Jules. Helena Bonham Carter eats Nutella out of a jar.
Yeah, she's a fashion designer who can get that necklace on the neck of Daphne Kluger, played by MVP of the film, Anne Hathaway, yes. Darling, who is essentially playing a version of herself deliciously.
Yes.
And she's like sort of the actress that they use to... get the necklace where they need it. We have Awkwafina, who is a pickpocket.
Constance.
Yes. And did I get all eight?
That's all eight.
Okay. Yeah. And then that's Ocean's Eight. And they work together to turn the party and steal the necklace. And I guess you'll have to find out if they do it.
And then, but then James Corden shows up. And do they outsmart him? You'll find out.
I bet you know the answer to that.
Who doesn't outsmart James Corden?
I do.
Oh,
that
bro.
Was the unasked question.
Oh, well, what did we all think of Ocean's 8, y'all?
I'm mad at Gary Ross.
Oh,
wow.
Coming in hot. Go ahead. What's up? What happened?
I really like the Ocean's movies, and this is just like, what? Who? There's no conflict. No. All of the women are just like, nope, we just love each other, and that's okay. And then there's, you know, no problems to overcome, really. It's just kind of sailing in on a women love each other and they're smart, you know? It's like the girl power message of the 1990s never kind of evolved into like an actual film. It's dumb. It's bland. And these actors are so good.
And that's the thing. I love everybody in this movie. And it's sort of like, with these ingredients, I should get a nice chocolate truffle. Mm-hmm. And I get a Hershey's Kiss. And a Hershey's Kiss is
fine. I like
fine.
Kisses. It's not even a kiss.
It's not, you know, it's like, it'll do. You don't really crave one, but it's there. It's in a bowl. You'll eat it. But when you think of all that went into it, you're like, really? That's all we get is a Hershey's Kiss? Where's my truffle?
Sure. I mean, Guy Branum calls this type of movie, I think, competence porn. It's like, people just, you just watch
good at their jobs.
Who are good at their jobs, and they're good at their jobs, and it's not complicated. But
it depends what you want from it.
Sure.
Look, if you want to watch like a like incredible actresses walk around looking fierce, playing exactly who you think they are. I mean, no one plays against type, not even close. It's just like they're doing exactly what they know the assignment going in. Honestly, was there no conflict? Yes. But what I've been saying is I actually think that you don't need conflict when you have Cate Blanchett looking that fierce in a black bag. And then it's a thing. Like, I liked the movie. I liked watching it. I wasn't mad at it.
Sure.
I'm mad at so many movies. I didn't get mad at this. Could it have been better with, like, even a little bit of effort?
Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, like, this was an easy one to throw back. I liked it. Definitely. It's so funny because I was thinking, is there any conflict? And they hint at it a little bit where Sandra Bullock gets the ex involved, right?
Sure, yes.
So,
sure.
Yeah. And Cate Blanchett's like, takes her outside and is like, are you fucking serious? But essentially, that's just like gone.
Yeah.
Blanchett just
like,
decides to trust her.
Yeah. Okay, it's like, I trust you.
We almost had a stake here, but no, we're not. But
No. It's fine.
And then even at the end of the movie when they bring Corden in, which, by the way, shouldn't that have been played by a woman?
Yeah.
Dame Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know what? Give me, you said Priyanka Chopra.
Give me Priyanka.
Ooh,
give me even
sure.
like,
well, give me Penelope Cruz.
This is for Ocean's
Thank
9.
Thank you. I'm trying to get excited. You can give me so many people. You just got so excited, you're not. The mic out of the air.
Michelle Yeoh.
Michelle Yeoh.
Oh,
I've been saying since before this movie came out, the movie seems like they're really like trying to hit like it's like a multicultural cast, or like they're trying to get a multicultural cast.
Right.
And there's no Latina representation in it. And
seriously?
Instead of James Corden, Penelope Cruz, y'all.
Yes.
That would have been amazing.
I'm sorry, like Michelle Rodriguez, I think, would
Michelle
be
Rodriguez.
Because that's somebody that you think they might not outsmart. James Corden,
What do we think about just the recent female-led remakes that are happening right now? I mean, obviously, Ghostbusters was the one that had the most kind
of... Okay, did you see Overboard? Because that was...
Episode on that
one.
Oh,
yeah. Hot garbage.
Oh, did you not enjoy it?
Oh, no, I didn't like it at all.
Oh, wow.
I just feel like she's obviously the one with the comedic gifts, and I understand, like...
Inverting the
inversion, but like I wanted to see her do the Goldie Hawn part. Like, she's Anna Faris.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
I don't know. But so that one just came to my mind when you said that.
It's not far from one of our critiques. We thought it was charming, I think, as a whole. But yes. that is not that is actually on point with our critique.
A lot of the talk was to be on point. They just don't. It seems like Hollywood doesn't know what to do with Anna Faris yet, and it's like fucking figure it out already.
Well, she's like moving on. She's on her podcast grind. Her podcast sister.
That's where the real money is.
Yeah, she is our tribe.
That's also an example where when you invert the roles, you're taking the more fun part away from
exactly.
the woman.
Yeah. I just didn't get it.
I loved the 2014 Ghostbusters. I still stand for that movie.
I like it too.
And I think people just were so determined to shit on it for so many reasons, but I think it's really funny. It holds together. It's a fun new way of doing this scenario, and I think it works. I like Paul Feig. I like that movie.
I've never said how I felt about Ghost Stories.
I haven't either because I'm scared.
Me too.
I didn't like it. I really thought it could. I thought it could have just been. It just felt like it was trying to be Ghostbusters. You know what I mean? Without not trying to be its own thing. I don't know. I felt the performances were. You know what they're all capable of,
mm-hmm.
and you could feel them operating at 60%. At least in my opinion, the only one I thought. Was memorable. Like,
Kate,
really?
Kate
do you
McKinnon.
Remember the
Kate
character
McKinnon.
That Kate McKinnon? And she's memorable because she is so bizarre and goofy, and I didn't feel that it was grounded. Although I will say that sequence of her fighting ghosts was pretty striking. I mean, that was like,
oh,
I'll
like,
never forget
so much,
that.
Yeah, that's great.
That was a
that's,
full body yeah. chill moment, and for that moment alone, I'm so happy that it happened. I just thought.
Well, Kate McKinnon in that movie is totally Jerry Lewis-ing it, where, like, even when she's not in a conversation or the camera's not focused on her, she's still doing a
yeah,
thing
she's
with her
it.
Face. She's making you look at her anyway.
And I think that's because there wasn't anything on the page, so she was like, well, I better make a big choice. And so there was her choice.
I was just going to say, I feel like there's so much pressure on that movie to get
yeah.
it right.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure there were a lot of, like, Ivan Reitman and Sony notes about, like,
oh,
we
yeah.
got to have these cameos,
yes.
and we got to
yeah.
make reference to this and this car and this, that. And
but
like,
there were
yeah.
decisions that were made that were so weird. Like, you're going to have Ghostbusters, and it kind of takes place in the Ghostbusters universe a little. They make a couple of jokes here and there. The Harold Ramis bus that you see.
Yeah.
But Bill Murray shows up, and he's not Bill Murray. He's not Bill Murray's character.
Right, right.
That's weird.
Peter Venkman.
I mean, you know what I mean.
I worked in a movie theater that summer. I saw the original Ghostbusters a lot of times.
I saw Ghostbusters in the theater. I'm old too, Alonzo. I'm old too, bro. Yeah, I walked out of it being like, hey, nice try, but that was just, I just didn't enjoy it.
But
at
again,
all.
And I love to watch a movie and just be like, I decide I like it. You know what I mean? With Ocean's 8, I decide I like it. You know what I mean? It's about what you want. Was it fun to watch? Sure. But I guess, like, I was just excited for it to be excellent.
Sure, of course.
You know
100%.
What I mean?
Yeah. We all went in with, like, well, you know, wearing our Ghostbusters gear.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
ready
there are
ready
definitely
to
movies that you like for what they were shooting for.
Yeah.
Like, I'm that way with Clue.
Mm.
I don't think it's a total
sure.
success, but I love what they were trying to do.
Yes.
And
yes.
so,
yes.
like,
yes.
I give
yes.
it a lot of points.
I'm
for
so
that.
Into Clue.
I've seen it a gajillion times, nonetheless, yeah. despite my, you know.
It is one of those so things good. Where, for me, when an Ocean's 8 or, like, a new Ghostbusters comes out with all women, there's so much writing on it, which is so fucking dumb, and it drives me insane that we have to have, because I want us to be able to have dumb fucking comedies that are okay, because like men have so many fucking dumb comedies that are okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, like, we don't get many of those. Kay Cannon, I think, did a really good one with Blockers that came out recently, but we don't even get to direct our own fucking movies. We don't even get to direct our own goddamn comedies. We're not pulling out Penelope Spheeris from retirement to, like, get her in there, that talent that she is. Like, there are people that could be directing these that, you know, should be, and we don't even get that.
Yeah.
It just drives me insane.
And this made the most of any Ocean's movie in the opening weekend.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're going to have that conversation once again of, like, hey, guys, when a movie around women does well, it's not a fluke. Like, there is an audience for that, and they'll come out to the next one if you'll make it.
Fuck, yeah. It is despite the male director, despite him, and him writing it, too. There's there's a woman who got credit, but, like, I don't think she wrote it.
Sure.
I think she tried to write it, and then he went and rewrote it. Yeah. Like, this is, like, it has that kind of feeling to me of a rewrite that someone didn't understand the original intent of what it was.
There are lines in the script that I think must have come from a woman. Like you pointed out the other day where she was like, we want to be invisible for once.
That's what we want. Right. We want to be invisible.
So weirdly, that scene stands out, right?
Yeah.
We're like, it doesn't seem like the rest of the movie or something. Like,
that's the one acknowledgement smart. Of...
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you're like...
It was just a lived-in moment for a second there.
Yeah.
And then there was...
There's another one.
Yes, it was...
Oh, God.
This is for all the little girls that are dreaming up wanting to be criminals.
That's great.
Have y'all seen the trailer for Widows yet?
No. Yes.
Oh. Yeah, ooh, I just saw it today. It's like... who's in this movie?
It's Viola Davis.
Viola Davis.
Michelle Rodriguez.
Yes. Michelle Rodriguez.
Debicki, the Australian actress, Elizabeth Debicki, I think.
I can't remember her name.
Anyway.
We'll gasp for her, too.
It's like a crew of, I guess they're all sort of mob wives, I guess?
Yeah.
And basically, like, their husbands get arrested for some job, and then the other mob guys are coming after them for the money, so they've got to go do a job to pay them. It's Viola Davis with a gun.
All right, love it.
And it's directed by Steve McQueen.
Yes. Oh, my God.
And written by Gillian Flynn.
Wow. That's a dream team.
I'm on board. The Gillian Flynn thing was like, okay, I'm seeing
that. Yeah.
It's amazing to be around some other Michelle Rodriguez stands.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about it.
What? Girl Fight is a fucking amazing movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but I just feel like people kind of the children have forgotten Michelle Rodriguez.
Mm. Yes. She's integral to the Fast and the Furious.
Underrated performance on Lost.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, as long as you don't have to talk about that terrible movie where she plays the hitman who gets an unwitting gender reassignment surgery.
Yeah. We can't speak of it.
Assignment?
The assignment.
Yes. Come on.
Get it?
That Widows trailer, too, also has a good, nod to another great heist movie. My favorite movie, Heat. The one they're all in the van and they're wearing the black hockey masks.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh, I was like, man, I'm very excited about this.
I thought
Widows
for sure
movie.
You were going to say Set It Off.
Because
I got serious Set It Off vibes from that trailer where I was just like, okay, like this is Set It Off with a much bigger budget with the technology that we have today.
Yes.
With like a different backstory.
Please don't hate me, y'all. I've never seen Set It Off.
That's fine.
Racist.
I will. Also, I am a racist. I'm not seeing that.
Wow. Now we get to be excited for a movie in your future.
I envy you getting to see it.
Thank you very much, y'all.
I like that, it.
That's
my
new,
that.
What? You haven't seen it?
I know. We're like trying not to be assholes. Actively trying not to be assholes.
Wait, hold
on. You can do it.
Just really quickly, Queen Latifah would have done the court in Part in Ocean's 8.
She would have been fantastic.
Anyway.
You guys. She could have done the comedy so good on that.
So much better.
Well, you know what? I think she's the weak link in Girls Trip. I think Jada would have been better.
Jada would have been excellent. Can I say, the best performance in Girls Trip is Regina Hall.
Regina! Regina Hall does not get the respect. You say this all the time.
This is what I say. Regina Hall, if there was any justice in the world, would be as big as Sandra Bullock.
Yes, and he says the time.
I say, just as
agreed.
Versatile.
Agreed. Yes.
Just as magnetic.
I support
you
that
100%. You are going to love a movie called Support the Girls that's coming out because she is the lead and she is amazing in it.
We need more of Regina.
It's coming out in the summer.
And
you're going to love it.
And Kevin Hart in the About Last Night remake.
Bingo.
Steal that movie. Yes. I don't even remember who the leads are. But the two of them, so funny, so sharp.
She is one of the funniest workers.
And her work in Scary Movie, we're big
fans. Brenda Forever.
You can almost... Brenda Meek's icon.
Icon.
Yes.
But you could almost watch just like a supercut of everything she does in the movies, and it's just as good as watching all the scary movies. I mean, really, she's just the main event.
She's the
clue.
Well,
it's like no, her and Anna Faris. We had to.
Yes.
We just talked about.
We did.
They're a dream team.
If they really are. Ocean's 9 with Anna Faris and Regina Hall.
Come on.
Now we're talking.
Come on.
Yeah, Dreamcast.
Well, Ocean's 8, y'all. What do we think? Screen it, stream it, or skip it?
I say screen it. I say go and just have fun.
Take an edible and screen it. Oh, yeah. Just like we did.
At the Arclight.
And then go see the gowns that are on display in the lobby. The real gowns.
It was very cool.
Yes. Also, I feel like screen it because I still feel like weird because the optics on the movie on the release are like, well, the reviews were disappointing. And it sucks that, like what you were saying before, it's like, it sucks that that's the optics on it, like the disappointing reviews. It's like, come on. And even nowadays when you hear like a $41 million weekend, people are like, well, that's not as high as Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom or whatever the garbage you want to bring up. And it's like, yeah, but it's... Which I don't think that movie's going to be garbage. I think it's going to be very fun.
I'm voting garbage, but I'm holding until I see it on Monday.
Right. But, like, yeah, I would just like to have it be successful so that we can, the next time, when there is an Ocean's 9, maybe someone scripts it and it's, like, a super tight, conflict-heavy script.
Hey, God.
I mean, I'll say stream it because it's not without its pleasures. There were I spent a lot of the movie kind of wishing it were better, but every so often I'd get what I wanted it to be and be like, ah, you know, and then I'd wait for the next one. So there are something in there, but just not enough.
She's mad at Gary Ross.
April just hates Gary Ross.
I'm mad at Gary Ross. I don't even know. I'm wavering between like skip it or screen it because I support women. I mean, I took friends to see this because, you know, a friend to see it because I was like, yes, we should see it. We're women. But I also only went to the theater when it was $5. So I feel bad.
So you supported a little.
I supported it a little. I don't know. I guess just screen it, whatever.
Screen it, whatever. Deflated. Oh, that's great.
Screen it.
When I saw it, you know, night one, I was like, this is great. Drinking a martini. That's, you know, living that life.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I was like, oh, that was all right, yeah. I guess. It was okay. And then yesterday, I was like, and today, I was like, it was just fine. Just fine. Fine.
And tomorrow you'll see the poster and go, oh, I should see that.
So I love the poster. Yeah. Big fan. Yes. Big fan. I wanted it to be even like more stylish the way it was filmed. Like I wanted more like split screens and like just like jazzy it up, you know?
Mean, with anything.
Right. Yeah. Ocean's 13, like go back and watch that. The lighting is insane.
Yeah.
Like it's so stylized, which is great. Like, but they really like swung. Yeah,
and this movie's score is promising a lot more ha cha cha than you're ever getting.
Sure, yeah, sure, yeah, totally. Yeah. Sure. Like it's in Cate Blanchett, like I would just like show up in your Thor costume, like fucking do it up, you know?
They were just doing themselves. They really were. It was crazy.
So I would say stream this movie. Don't skip it. Stream it, yo. Make yourself some martinis. We are going to take a break. When we come back, friend of the show, Drea Clark, will have an interview with director Bobby Miller.
You're listening to Who Shot You. You'll be right back.
Friendship is tough, especially when you're constantly slaying carnivorous hell beasts bent on your destruction.
Hey, make sure to clean the tub. I might actually need to shower today.
Oh, don't give me that. You've been wearing the same pair of track pants since Tuesday. I mean, they still have the size sticker on the leg.
Yeah, they do. Well, still, I was thinking today might be the day.
Yeah, yeah. Ah, it's still alive! Kill it!
I don't have any weapons!
Get it with the shower head!
Shit. My burrito got some gunk on it.
But that's just Fairhaven. We make it work. Bubble, the sci-fi comedy from MaximumFun.org. Just open your podcast app and search for Bubble.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
April Wolf.
Matt Rogers. John, do it again. I'm so sorry.
Oh, Bowen. Yay.
Now, this past week, our good friend Drea Clark sat down with director Bobby Miller to discuss his new movie, The Cleanse. Now, the film stars Johnny Galecki, Angelica Houston, and Oliver Platt. Let's take a listen to Drea's interview with Bobby right now.
I'm very excited today. I'm here with my dude, Bobby Miller, who directed an amazing film called The Cleanse, which is out now. We're going to chat about that, and I'm also going to pester him about all sorts of other things, Cleanse and Creature related. What's up, Bobby?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. So The Cleanse. The Cleanse is such a great film. It's so odd and it's so hard to describe. And that truthfully is my sweet spot for films that I love. Like, I want to pitch you on this film, but I don't want you to think it's a certain thing because it won't be that. And I really think that's a hard kind of film to make and do well, and I think you did. Can you give me, do you still remember the pitch or the quick synopsis of what The Cleanse is about?
Well, it's about a group of people who are all kind of sad in their own ways. They want to restart their lives, so they go on a retreat with like a fad diet with like this cleanse drink, like the Master Cleanse.
Yeah.
And they drink this stuff, and it makes them sick, and so they expel what they drank, and that stuff turns into creatures that kind of represent the negative parts of themselves or what have you.
Yes. The demons within.
Yes.
Becoming actual little demons.
Yeah, little goopy guys.
It's tricky because it's one of those films that the whole premise is a spoiler. Do you know what I mean? Because you don't want to leave out the goopy guys because that's a big appeal of it.
Yeah.
But it's also a huge thing that you learn about the characters.
That's why, in a way, the festival circuit was the purest version of the film because people would watch it and they'd be like, what the hell's going on
right.
here?
I think it speaks highly of your script. Your cast is insane. So it's Johnny Galecki, Anna Friel. Is it Friel? Friel?
Friel.
Friel. Okay.
I think.
Sounds sort of elfin.
Yeah.
And I love her. I think she's incredible. Angelica freaking Houston, mm-hmm. Oliver Platt, Kyle Gallagher. Who am I missing? I feel like I remember. Or not Gallagher.
Gallner.
Gallner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoops. Don't tell Kyle
it's
Gallner.
Okay.
But I feel like getting a cast like that is so, in an indie level, and for a first-time director, it is so much of, it needs to be something really special that they've read. And I think it's one of those, it can be, at times, as a first-timer, people can be like, don't throw the kitchen sink at this. You won't die after this. Keep some of those things so you have a more, like, you know, cohesive, recognizable piece. But then there's something to be said. People get so excited by something new and a whole new story. And did you find, like, that the actors were responding to the script? Like, when you met them, it was less of a strong arming and more of a, oh, wow, they really get it. Like,
yeah, I mean, it was more the later because, you know, it took so long to get any actor to look at it because there's always, you know, agencies are protecting themselves from weird things, you know, that could potentially be bad, you know. So once we kind of broke through and were getting two actors, people, you know, wanted to meet because of, I think fundamentally because of what the movie was about, what the metaphor of the movie was about. The fact that it gets at it at a weird place was something that they were interested in, you know.
Do you have any good, like, Angelica Houston or Oliver Platt or Johnny Galecki? That guy's got fans, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Any good juicy Hollywood gossip?
I've been trying to the only thing I can think of is when we first met Angelica and it kind of turned into a surreal Hollywood thing.
Where were you?
It was me and Johnny, and she had read the script, and we were both, like, really giddy. So we went to her place.
You went to Angelica Houston's house?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So we went to her place, and we were all nervous because we were like, should we bring something? Like, should we bring a bottle of wine? Or, like, we didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Because we're getting invited to her home.
Angelica Houston, I would want to bring, like, a vial of virgin's blood.
Right.
I get
something.
It. I get it.
At least something like that. So, so we went there and, you know, we're kind of waiting for her and we're talking. And, like, within 15 minutes, like, she excuses herself to, like, pop a bottle of champagne. So she, like, beat us to the punch of bringing stuff. And I was like, where? And we're just, like, kicking each other underneath, like, the table of, like,
and did you know she was, like, on? Were you, like,
no, I mean, we knew she responded to it, but I didn't know what that, I you know, like, you always figure it's a general meeting, you know, like, blah, blah, blah. But
so it took Angelica Houston reading your script and then only 15 minutes of being in your not weird presence to be like, all right, let's get the champers. This is happening.
I think part of it is always like just to make sure I'm on the level.
Yes. Oh, that is a big thing. You can, yeah, people smell a weirdo.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm not letting that person tell me what to do for a month. Yeah.
Exactly.
I love that. I love that you're in her house. And please don't ruin this for me, because in my head, she's for sure wearing a silk pajama set with like a very flowing, like those like feathery boa thing. So,
you know, I don't know what she was wearing, but in my mind, that makes sense.
Yes.
I'm going to go with that. I'm gonna...
That tracks for you as well. Okay, good. Good. Agreed.
Yeah.
There's your memory. Do you think there's a I'll phrase this as, I think there is a necessary space for films that are off the beaten path, that are odder, that are representing something that, like this, you know, loneliness and wanting to be better is totally universal, but being told in a story format that's a little odd and a little absurd, I think it's really important to the art form. Is it something, are you drawn to those kinds of stories as a viewer as well?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think, I also feel like, honestly, with so much stuff being made, I kind of feel like you have to have something crazy in your thing to stand out. Because I was at I think it was like Maryland Film Festival with the movie, and I was just like, this movie is really just the same as all the other independent films. It's about loneliness and failure to connect and all that sort of thing. It just has creatures in it.
Right.
You know?
That's a good point. I mean, I think there's a strange thing, especially the huge Herculean push of trying to get your first indie up and going. And having something that sets you aside, it's probably a good tip for burgeoning filmmakers because, you know, I'm like, for me, of programming for festivals, and I'm watching hundreds of movies, I'm like, oh yeah, I've seen The Lonely Guy.
Yeah.
No worries. But I don't often see him with a creature that he shat that represents his demons. Sure. Yeah. That's a new fun twist. Is there something, are you also drawn to conventional stories? Like if you know, there's that thing of you see new filmmakers get launched and then they're like, oh, they're doing the next Marvel. And I'm like, great. Well, drinks are on them for the rest of my life. But, you know, it's that thing of not all filmmakers have the same, you know, desire to end up in like a very specific studio track or whatever. What would you say your, like, ooh, what my dream, make this room your the secret, Bobby. Like, what is the kind of thing that you would love to grow towards?
I mean, the only property that I would care about rebooting is, no surprise, would be Gremlins. That's the only one where I would put all of my pretensions of like, I can't be part of the problem. Like, I would have no problem being the problem.
Yeah.
Because it would seem so fun to do and do it the right way with practical effects. So, like, I could easily, like, in terms of mainstream me, that genre that is kind of forgotten, sometimes it'll pop up here and there, of like kind of family comedy, weird sci-fi horror thing that sometimes happens. I could totally see doing that, like Joe Dante, like The Burbs, mm-hmm. or something like that. That's a little left of center of that, you know.
There used to be more of those films.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, they've gone away.
They have. Did you have anything else about The Cleanse? Where can people find it?
On every online platform known to man,
known to humankind.
Yeah.
Every single one.
Yeah, iTunes, Amazon, you name it.
Google, click it, leave a nice review.
Yeah.
And embrace your inner weirdness with The Cleanse.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Thank you so much, Bobby.
Thank you.
Thank you, Drea. That was great. Now, April, you have seen The Cleanse. Can you tell us a little bit about the movie?
Well, it's cute. It is so cute. I really didn't know, you know, it is hard to describe this film because I think they had a hard time with, you know, marketing, because, yeah, it's horror film, not horror film, genre film, maybe monster film. Yeah. So but his character design, his little creatures that Bobby Miller made, they're so lovable and wonderful, and it has like serious tones of Joe Dante for sure. Mm. And it's you know, it is kind of like a relationship drama in a way, though.
But is it elevated horror?
Right, right. I mean, it's honestly like when I say it's cute, it's just like, oh, I felt good watching this movie. And that's hard to do, you know, like the story carries and you feel good. And, you know, like he definitely accomplished what he wanted to do with this film. But, the thing is, that, like, where does it sit in the genre and the canon of things? And,
yeah. What
and
shelf of the video store?
Yeah. But it's so funny. After I watched it and I tweeted out, you know, like, this is a really a sweet and thoughtful film, and I love the characters who are just adorable. A bunch of people watched it with their like husbands, wives, and they were like, "This is great," but I never would have heard about it. But you know, I'm glad that we get to highlight it on the show because those things do fall through the cracks. If they're not Hereditary, who's just like, "We're gonna scare the shit out of you," you know, then like, there's nothing that you can tell people. You know, like, oh, it's just sweet. You know.
Well, thank you to Drea for doing that interview. That was super fun, and now it is. It's time for Staff Picks, y'all. Every week we ask the panel to tell us about a movie we think folks should check out, any movie at all. Who would like to start us off? Guests?
I'll start. Okay. Have you guys seen Disobedience?
I have not yet.
Oh, it is fantastic. Oh. Did you see? You did not.
You didn't like it? Oh my God! Wow. You liked Overboard and not Disobedience?
No,
what room am I in?
There were parts to like about it for sure.
I think I'm just literally in love with Rachel McAdams, and I think this is like the best performance of her career. I think if she can get an Oscar nomination for being a nice person in Spotlight, she should be winning an Oscar for what she does in Disobedience.
She got an Oscar nomination for Michael Cera Creighton crying on her.
Yeah, you're right.
Michael. Hi, Michael. Well, this is, I mean, she performs the most convincing orgasm I've ever seen.
Wow.
Like, I just was like, this movie, like, it's, I couldn't believe how far they went with, like, the lust between them. Like, Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams, they're so good. And also, the gentleman who plays the actor who plays, what's Alessandro Nivola.
Yeah,
yes.
He's so good. I hate saying that. Like, there's two amazing female actresses, but he's might be he steals the show. He's really good.
Wow. And honestly, it comes at you very late, but he gives, like, a monologue at the end of the movie, which is, like, really the stuff that, like, you know, it's incredible. It's incredible work. And also, he's kind of unrecognizable from all of his other work. And I think this movie is really worth seeing. I mean, even if you leave having, like, even if you don't have a good, like, if you don't like it, just give it a shot. Because I think
you'll have seen something.
You'll have seen something. And honestly, you could be a me and love it.
I'll go next. My staff pick is going to be, whatever, like esoteric, blah, blah, blah. Kung Fu Hustle.
Oh,
Stephen Chow.
Yes.
I just like mentally revisited it and like just, I was just like, I gotta watch that movie again. Cause I just grew up like just watching, like we would watch like as teenagers, like for Chinese get togethers and dinner parties, like the default activity was to watch Shaolin Soccer and like just laugh at all like the jokes and all that slapstick, like the slapsticky humor. But then Kung Fu Hustle, I think, was like Stephen Chow's like, I want to say his last big, like, auteur-y film. So, I mean, like, whatever. I don't know if that's a good way to put it, but just so fun. So, like, Three Stooges meets The Matrix meets Bruce Lee. Like, what a fun mashup of genres and, like, just such a fun, fun movie. It was on Netflix for a bit. I think it's on some streaming services out there, but I've been meaning to revisit it, and I just think, why not have the listeners of Who Shot Ya join me. So fun.
That's what's up. Kung Fu Hustle is the real,
it's
yo.
It's so good.
Yes.
It's such a good movie.
Yes,
oh, my
super
God.
Fun.
Yeah.
Mine is on Netflix, and I'm excited because this is a movie that I loved in the 90s and then kind of fell through the cracks. It was one of those, like, a production entity owned it and not the studio, and so it was like nobody was putting it out on DVD. It's a film called The New Age, and it's written and directed by Michael Tolkin. He wrote the novel and the screenplay of The Player, and then he did that amazing movie The Rapture with Mimi Rogers, which is about a woman who gets involved in this sort of like apocalyptic cult and has to deal with the pending end of the world. This is also a movie about people looking for spiritual answers, but they're more likely to look for it via shopping. And it's a couple played by Peter Weller and the great Judy Davis.
Wow.
And they both sort of hit career dead ends, and so they figured the only thing they're good at is shopping and talking, so they decide to open a boutique on Melrose. And things sort of spiral out from there, but it is another great Judy Davis performance. I think a lot of people probably haven't seen. Peter Weller is amazing. Samuel L. Jackson, the best dramatic Adam West performance you'll probably ever see. This is an amazing film, and I think people don't know it exists, and it's now on Netflix. So go check out The New Age. I think it'll rock your world.
Wow. The New Age. Yes. That's what's up. My staff pick this week is we watched a movie that involves a heist, so I picked a movie that is a heist. Spike Lee makes two kinds of movies. I don't know if I've said this on the show before, but Spike Lee makes two kinds of movies. Either like, yo, this is what's really going on in the world, shit is real, and we have to deal with it, or, oh, you motherfuckers don't think I know how to make a Hollywood hot fun movie? Here's The Inside Man. Enjoy. And The Inside Man is just like such a fun ass movie that is so not a quote-unquote Spike Lee movie.
I think they're called Joints.
Spike Lee Joints.
April School of Vito.
It's my understanding.
Oh, my God. That was good.
That was very good.
Woker than that.
Up, yo, you right. You right, though. See, what it is you right, though. You right.
Respect the title card.
You dig. Shown up.
Shown up. Oh, well, in this Spike Lee joint, it's Denzel Washington. It is Clive Owen. It's
Miss Jodie Foster.
Yeah, the gays are like Jodie Foster.
This half of the room. Yeah.
We exploded. We are nothing more.
I was about to give her the biggest intro.
We thought you were
cut me off. No, I was saving the best for last. There's like when an actor and a director work together and you just never realize like, oh, you two should make movies together all the time. Mm. Like Jodie Foster in that movie is other fucking level. I think we generally don't talk about that performance enough. I also like that she's playing the villain in that movie. I mean, not the main villain, but she's definitely going up against what Denzel is trying to do.
April.
Oh,
April, did I cut you off and not say you didn't get your pick up there?
I've got mine here, right? I just forgot about it. I'm working on an article for the Washington Post that is about women in action movies and their footwear.
Tied to what?
Interesting. It's a little movie it's tied to. You guys probably don't even know the name, so I'm not even going to say it. But so I'm working on this article, and so I've been talking to costume designers, and I did talk to Ellen Mirajnik, who did Strange Days, Starship Troopers, and Speed, and Twister, and so many other great movies that have great women characters in them where they got to run. And I loved talking to her about Starship Troopers. And I need everyone to see this movie because it is one of my favorite films ever. And it is a film. And it is like, I don't think I've recommended this before. I mean, if you guys haven't seen it, definitely see it just to be on the same level with me because it is one of my top five of like all time.
Wow. Is that right?
Yeah, I think when I was applying to film schools, I would name that and they really liked that. They were like, oh, good. You're in the Starship Troopers. Hint to people applying to film schools. I mean, I'm not going to go into, you guys can read the article when it comes out, but the costume design of that film, just look at it and pay attention to it because it is phenomenal. When you really think about what was happening, how gender balanced these costumes were for these people in this kind of weird dystopia and what they thought the future was like. And it's so good. It's so good.
The costumes match the mixed gender showers in that movie.
They do, yeah. I mean, there's a whole thing I'm going to go into about, you know, Paul Verhoeven's vision about what that meant. But it's, see Starship Troopers for the action, for the gore, for the funny dialogue.
For the political satire.
The political, yeah. That's so spot on. And then like the big reveal that's just like, oh, duh, yeah. It's so good. Yeah. I love that movie, Starship Troopers.
Is Denise Richards in that?
Hell yes.
Is.
Oh, hell
this yes, is the son. Second time she's come up today.
Yeah. What was the other time
before
she came up?
Before, we mentioned her in Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Drop Dead Gorgeous, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also a great film.
Also great
Dr.
Film.
Christmas Jones.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God, one of the best names.
Oh my God.
Starship Troopers, till this day, one of the best trailers ever made as well. That trailer is fucking amazing.
Well, I just remember that there was like from the maker of RoboCop, Basic Instinct, and I whatever theater, and I was always yell out and Showgirls.
Ah, yes, thank you.
Next week we will be talking about Incredibles 2 with Drea Clark. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, leave us that good review on Apple Podcasts, y'all. 5-star reviews get a shout out on the show. This week we got Glad You're Dead says, listening to Hushaya is always a feel good experience. Everyone is fun and hilarious. That's what's up. Glad you're dead. You're what's up. Thank you.
And we're glad
I'm glad alive. You're alive.
Yeah. Jinx.
I felt like he was going to say it, so I was like, oh, I've got to get there.
Alonzo, you want to take this next one?
Sure. Be More Betty says, I followed you over from Pop Rocket because I loved your personalities there. I guess that would be me and Amy. Amy.
Hello, my name is Amy Wolf.
Amy.
Me and April, the fifth Beatles of Pop Rocket. And I stayed because you all made me remember how much I love movies. The camaraderie, commentary, and coverage are worth tuning in for, and that's what's up.
Mm. Ooh. Mm. A disappointing app says, Pop Rocketeer and Linoleum Knifer here.
Yay! Ooh.
And so I had to check out this pod, and oh my pod, it's awesome. Love. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you to our fantastic guests.
Yay.
Thank you for having us.
This was a pleasure.
Fun. We should do a caper.
Let's all caper together. Come on.
I think it would be better than a certain movie.
We could rob LA Pride and then get forced to go home by helicopter.
Hello!
There you go. Cops of Pride. We love it.
Tell our listeners where they can find you, where they can see you, plug anything.
You guys can listen to our podcast, Las Culturistas. And we actually, if you're in New York, we're going to be having a live show at the Bell House on June 29th called I Don't Think So, Honey. 50 comedians are going to be ranting on things in pop culture that they do not like for 1 minute each. It's fun. Festival, honey.
Yes. The podcast, we've been called the Drag Daughter of Pop Rocket.
We have.
Oh.
So we take that title, we hold it proudly.
We really do. Yeah. Our drag mother is Guy Branum.
Yes.
And you can follow us on Twitter and shit.
Yeah.
Well, you guys mentioned you have a live show coming up. We also have a live show coming up. Hushaya has a live show coming
that.
Up. Yeah, we do. Next month, we are going to be screening Attack the Block at the Dynasty Typewriter Theater right here in Los Angeles. Afterwards, we'll discuss the movie with some great guests. I can't say who they are right now. Come and say hi. It'll be a great time. We'll be posting about that soon, so keep an eye out for it. Check out our Facebook group if you haven't subscribed yet. Handle that at facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast. Have a comment or suggestion about this week's show? Tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod or send us an email at WhoShotYaMaximumFun.org. We have every day this month we have been tweeting out movies for Pride Month.
Yes.
Movies that highlight LGBTQTA. Make that
sure.
You gotta switch that T and that Q, but you are right on the money. At least they all got mentioned. Often they don't.
I was going for it. I was going for it.
T's need a promotion.
You, Matt, you posted something very lovely.
Girl, I just saw this on the list. Are we going to have to perform it again?
If you want. What do you think?
So here's the thing. It's Pride Month, and what that means is you get all the gay community together, and everyone is a bitch to each other.
Yes.
About what's happening, what we're doing, where we're going. And the text chain that Bowen and I were on influenced a song.
Yes.
And also us listening to Big Frida a lot this week.
Big Frida came out with a new EP, and so I played a song which inspired, the beat of which inspired Matt to write his own song.
All right.
The inclusive queer anthem of 2018.
It
speaks to us all.
It's called Be a Bitch to Your Closest Friends, parentheses, This Pride.
So
and
here
here's how it goes.
I'm just giving you
be a bitch to your friends. Be a bitch to your closest friends this pride. Alienate all your closest friends by being a bitch to them. Shake your bitchy ass. And shake your bitchy face. Shake it all around. be a bitch to your closest friends this pride.
There you go.
And you know, I have written a second verse, but it's not ready.
Okay. Okay.
She's cooking, and we're also going to have a featured Nicki Minaj-esque verse. We couldn't get Nicki.
But
get it ready for next June. You can get booked at all the festivals.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm on a tour. I'm literally on a world tour.
That was great. Thank you very much,
Thank
gentlemen.
You.
Thanks for having us.
Our producers are Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This has been a production of MaximumFun.org, and that's what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.